This is The Strategist, episode 1291. My name is Zane Velji. With me, as always, it's Corey Hogan. And of course, it's Stephen Carter. And yes, featuring a nice San Pellegrino. Go ahead, Corey. I have to say, that's
the
first time.
Do you not get carbonated? Is that what the issue is? Are you getting...
This is the fourth member of our podcast since Annalise's not here.
I'm not sure. We weren't really consulted on the development of this character.
You're kind of insulting Annalise by saying we've replaced her with a lemon-flavored San Pellegrino.
That's true.
Listen, a lemon-flavored San Pellegrino answers my texts. That's all I have to say about that.
I mean, why would she answer your texts? You've been on a tear recently. By the way, there's been many texts, many notes to us saying, listen, now that, you know, things have happened in the orbit, is the podcast still alive? Is the podcast still going to happen? And guess what? We're fucking here. The podcast talks about the issues. Okay, Corey? It talks about all of the issues. It doesn't care which side any of us might be on. We address things head on. We're in the moment. And we live for the moment. Fuck, this is what we live for, isn't it?
We're all about being head on. I think that's how I would describe things.
Not head on, but head on. Yes, that is correct. So whatever
campaigns we may or may not be supporting in any capacities may or may not be doing, we're always to the point. We're never vague. We don't beat around the bush. No matter what we might be up to, which, you know, we may or may not get into at different times, occasionally.
Give it to you straight.
You know, Carter? We give it to you straight.
Carter, that's your hallmark. We're actually adopting your hallmark for the podcast, giving it to the people straight.
I'm just happy that you two have finally joined me over here on the side that talks to the audience and gives them the straight goods. I mean, you guys have couched things for so long.
I'm going to be honest. I've been lying to the audience for years.
Yeah. Go ahead, Corey.
Many years.
Anything you want to admit right now?
Corey was actually never the executive director of the Alberta Liberal Party.
I so wish that was true, Stephen.
I so wish
that was true.
Let's begin our first segment, political regrets. Corey, what is your political regret?
Oh, man. You know, that actually probably is. The real answer there is staying in that job as long as I did because I hated it. I wanted not to do it anymore, but I foolishly believed I was the only thing holding things up, and if I left, things would go bad, and then people would blame me because I thought being an executive director mattered.
That's an interesting answer, but it is wrong. Carter, what is your political regret? and I'll jump in with mine as well.
Well, right now, all of them. All of them have gone down.
Okay, the correct answer, universally, for all three of us, is, say it with me, that is our political...
No, I'm not going to say that.
Why? What?
Say that?
It was our ultimate political regret. Why was it not our ultimate political regret, Stephen Carter?
Because
it was pretty much our ultimate political regret. I mean, my favorite campaigns were the campaigns where the candidate doesn't listen to you harshly, right? Like, it's one thing not to be listened to, but it's something completely different to not be listened to aggressively and harshly. And I always appreciated that about... It built me a lot of character.
Okay, Carter, you know, I love you. You know, it is a brotherly love. Sometimes it is a tough love, especially we're on different sides of things. But you know one thing, Corey, that
we've never
people
been on different
about
sides,
Carter,
have we?
We'll see.
No, we've always come to...
You've been on Pine Tar recently quite a bit, which is sixth man of the year, Stephen Carter. Are you in your sixth man phase, by the way?
I'm in what I lovingly refer to as senior advisor phase.
Yeah, that was sixth man. Yeah. That's like Monica Ginobili, Jason Terry style sixth man stuff. Corey, one thing people don't talk about Carter is how good he is at cutting his losses.
Zane, I got a question for you. What's better than winning sixth man of the year?
Is this a riddle or a joke?
It wasn't a good enough joke to warrant. That is just to actually be a starter. Yeah.
That's true. There's very few players.
That's really upsetting.
I was just trying to say, Carter, you cutting your political losses, I think, is one of your best political skills. And I just want to, you know, use this time on episode 1291 to compliment you for that. I should have told you this many years ago when Stephen Carter just was not there. I was like, wait, Carter brought me in. He just was not there. I like that.
Yeah, you know why? I just left.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Now, you just left.
It was done.
I at least had the courtesy to say, I'm leaving.
Yeah, so, it was a rough one.
Like, either of you, it was only because I got very busy.
Yeah.
Neither of you had the courtesy of telling me. Just a basic text.
I didn't even remember you were there, to be honest. I mean, I would have sent you a note had I remembered. I feel bad now. Now I feel bad.
I'll just say, have lukewarm success in politics.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. That's stuff.
Let's move it on. Like I said, Corey, we deal with the issues head on. We're going to move it on to our first segment.
We don't censor ourselves.
Yeah.
We've never censored ourselves, okay? Nope. We don't have anything to protect.
Why'd you lose, Zane? No, just keep going. Keep going. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Yeah.
Can you maybe start asking that question about like T-minus 6 months? Can you just park that? And we might be able to have it again, just to let you know, if you want to have that conversation twice in a row. Zero answers.
A bit of debt here. A bit of debt you might have. Yeah.
Zero answers. Let's move it on to our first segment. Our first segment, Corey, Purple Rain. It is the biggest story. Right, it's all.
I don't know if it's the biggest story.
I understand why
you might think it's the biggest story.
It's sucking up all the oxygen. It is an undeniable force. It is catching the internet by storm. It is catching people on the street by storm. It's all about the Royals, Stephen Carter. Oh my goodness!
Royals, yeah.
What has happened to Kate Middleton? Is she alive? Is she dead? Was she alive in November?
This is reckless speculation, even by our standards.
We've got the best libel insurance known to man. Okay,
that's not a thing. That's okay.
we've got libel insurance. Trust me, I have a PDF. Okay, Carter, we're gonna spend the entire episode talking about Purple. Royal Hooray. Purple, because this story, Corey, is gripping. In all seriousness, this is a fascinating story, and it has tons of strategic and communications implications, and I want to study them while we're living them. Corey, can you give us a bit of a high-level summary around what the hell is going on for those that are uninitiated, which I suspect are very few people, on the story that's taken the world by storm?
I mean, I kind of feel like I'm uninitiated at a certain level. That's not going to stop me from commenting and probably getting some of the facts wrong.
Welcome to this podcast. Thank you.
Welcome to this podcast. Yeah. So Kate Middleton has been out of the public eye for quite some time. Yeah. The royal family is going through a bit of a thing right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Charles is dealing with cancer. Not a lot of details there has come out of the public limelight. Camilla, the queen, has kind of joined him in kind of stepping off of the campaign trail, so to speak. But also what's happened in there, and the thing I think that we're going to be probably talking a bit about the strategy of, shall we say, along the way, is Kate Middleton, Princess Catherine, Willie Windsor's wife, whatever you want to use to describe her particular role and connection to the royal family, underwent surgery. The surgery seemed to be somewhat sudden. Again, not a lot of details. And it seemed to go on for a longer recovery period than anybody envisioned, given that events are now being canceled a little bit later on. And nobody has seen her since then. And why this is particularly noteworthy is this is a woman who, within like hours of giving birth, was wearing a dress and holding her newborn baby and waving, outside of the hospital where this occurred here. So it's not as though the royals are particularly camera shy at moments where you would expect normal people to be camera shy. So that's all like stuff. And, it sounds like the family's going through a lot. And obviously Queen Elizabeth died not too long ago too. And it's been a bit of a go for them. The fighting with Harry and Meghan Markle and the drama never ends. But now what has kind of kicked everything into like 20th gear is on what is Mother's Day in the United Kingdom. A tweet was released by Kensington Palace, which is the Prince and Princess of Wales, like their Buckingham Palace, right?
Their office, exactly.
Yeah, that has a picture of Kate with the three kids kind of outside, and it was released through official channels, and then Associated Press and Reuters and all of the various kind of wire services sent out what's called a kill notification saying, this is doctored. This is clearly a doctored photo. Pull this down from all of the stories. And so the speculation of where is Kate which has always had a bit of a conspiratorial bend. People saying, did she leave William? Did she die, you know, to kind of talk about the kind of the things you were alluding to, like some really kind of like, I've seen stuff that is kind of like quasi seriously presented in so far as like she's imprisoned by them because she tried to leave William, all sorts of crap, right? And in this kind of morass, which is kind of that usual internet dreck, they release this photo, which is now photoshopped, and nobody has still seen her since. Like, the palace did not then put out another photo of her. The palace didn't provide any other kind of proof of life, so to speak, or anything like that. And so the internet has gone to fucking 11 by internet standards as to what in the world is happening here. And I got to tell you, I think I'm becoming a Kate Middleton truther. I'm just going to put it out there here.
We all are Stephen Carter. There's so many things to discuss here that fall into the lane of the Strategist podcast. And let's start here, Carter. What should the official response of the Lieutenant Governor of Alberta be in this situation? Asking for a friend.
Well, I mean, the Lieutenant Governor is probably going to be approached by media all day long tomorrow about this, especially after this episode. And my recommendation would be, don't speculate. Make sure you say the truth with authority, and that truth is that she's been abducted by aliens. So make sure that truth is said with authority, because if you make it sound like it was a joke or something, it won't play. She's been abducted by aliens, and obviously William's in on it. He probably asked the aliens to abduct her. That's what I'm hearing.
Sorry. Go ahead. Jump in on here.
I'll just say that Occam's razor probably applies here. It's probably pretty simple. She probably had a worse go of surgery than was reported. The recovery time is probably longer. She's probably not at all fucking feeling that she'd be in the media. Probably a combination of things like, I'm not going to play these petty royal games right now, William. I'm sick of this shit. And it's just kind of elevated now into some sort of wild thing. But this is where we're at. And we're at a situation where people are dissecting footage of her in her car going places and asking things like, is that really her? And do you think that that's like, is she being Weekend at Bernie's? You know, like, guys, it's just like some of the nonsense is crazy.
Tell me this, because I'll be serious for a second. I think there are things that really apply to our lane of strategy and communications, Carter. And let me start here, which may not be the natural point to start, but I think it's interesting, which is, what has the last week or so taught you about virality? Or change your opinion around virality, especially when you have an issue that comes up that has been an undercurrent, potentially niche, and then goes mainstream like this. Like, I find this so fascinating. Any thoughts to that from your perspective as you think about as a comm strategist around when we talk about going viral and the current nature of viral? This is a very interesting version of it, because it's almost building on, Corey used the word truther, but like, you know, internet sleuths one-upping one another and like kind of undercover, you know, people are deep into this in a really interesting way. Has this taught you anything?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, never leave this space for rumors to develop. Always get a definitive answer. And I think that the palace has always taken a really lax view towards giving a full and complete answer on things that they just don't want to answer. In today's society,
historically had to be accountable to anyone, really.
In today's society, you have to be accountable to the mob, if you will, because if you're not accountable to the mob will come after you. And that's what's happening here. The mob has come after them. And now what I think is fascinating is the mainstream media is coming after them. And most of the mainstream media are coming after them, either tongue in cheek or reporting what, reporting about the virality, doing what we're doing, right? This is a viral story. So we'll talk about the virality rather than talking about the veracity. And that is a the mainstream media's trick to get in on these, sordid stories is to talk about the process by which we got here. I mean, oh my goodness, did you see how viral that went? We have to talk about it on our show, because this is the first time anything's ever gone viral. Truth is, they're chasing ratings, right? And whether it's the Daily Show covering it, or you know, the late night shows, or the tabloid media in the UK, all of them are chasing the same thing, and that is eyeballs.
That's a really interesting distillation. That virality is the story. That something going viral is just covering it for that, rather than what's perhaps deeper in it. And at least for a first round of media, Corey, do you agree with that? And I guess what lessons has this taught you about modern day virality? Because we've had that term kind of statically applied for the past decade, and I'm just wondering if a story like this clarifies what virality means in a calm sense today.
So I agree, but I think it's more than that. It's more than what Stephen said. I don't know when you all became aware of kind of the Kate Middleton rumors. For me, it was, why does her name keep trending on Twitter? It wasn't a big conversation of anyone.
For me, it was
followed.
Soraya. Like, my wife was like, yeah. You, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
So,
right?
But, so I yeah. clicked and I saw some of these stories and I sort of understood it, but it was all internet rumors still. Mm-hmm. So when I say it's more than that, there's no doubt in my mind that all of Fleet Street, all of the UK press has been talking and speculating about what the hell's going on with Kate Middleton, but there's no way to write that story, right? There is no way to write that story. And so they were waiting for an opportunity to actually say something. And by the way, we've done this. Like, remember that episode we did in December about the NDP leadership? It was like a 2-hour banger.
We were waiting for episode. A piece. Yeah, Marcus Offer.
We needed something. Because everybody knew who was actually in, like at least everybody who's sort of orbiting around it. Everybody's having those conversations. Nobody is putting it out there. And we didn't want to be the
people. And at this point, the race wasn't official sort of thing.
The race was not official. Rachel had not announced she was stepping down. And so we were waiting for something that would justify us saying it, that it didn't make it just sound like a bunch of rumors. And they got that with the kill notice, with the photo and the kill notice. And I actually think that that's one of the more interesting things here. Is that if the Royals had not done this, if they had just stayed a little bit more in their lane, put out a text tweet where people would say, why can't we see you or whatever, right? The media would not have had this hook. But the minute that there was actual news, and let's be clear, a kill notice about something coming out from the royal family that is speculatively like manipulated propaganda imagery, that is actually a story, right? So once they had that story, it allowed them through innuendo to fill in the backstory. And so that, I think, is an important part of what's occurred here too. But I also think it is a bit of a template now that media know or hear more than they can actually report on. And they love these hooks that allow them to actually address the rumors, as Stephen said, without addressing their veracity.
With some scaffolding or justifiable or not, with some scaffolding. Yeah. And so if we keep it on strategy, Carter,
yeah.
What was the lesson here around, like, and I guess you said in this age, you need to respond to the mob in some way, you need to be accountable to them in some way. I'm paraphrasing you, feel free to correct me. But don't you think that the proactive action by Kensington Palace to release a photo was the pent up sort of like, this is our response to the mob, leave us the fuck alone, here's a photo, she's alive and well? Like, did they, like, in your mind, don't you think that was exactly what they did, and now are facing a series of, perhaps with that unforced error, a series of other hurt or other problems?
No, because they lied, Zane. And you can't lie and think, oh, well, we've solved this communications problem. Lying is a cardinal sin in communications. And by doing so, basically the royal family has put themselves into a really difficult spot. And You just simply, you know, if you're going to take a lesson from this, learn a couple of different points. Don't lie, and make sure that you're filling as much of the news cycle as humanly possible. And it doesn't actually even need to be with news. It can be with process. We plan to update you on this day. We plan to give you more information on this day. We're asking for in this hour, we're asking you for for privacy at this time. We're going to be moving towards an answer in full time, in a fulsome answer at this point. But it appears that they just are skipping over different steps. If you're in a crisis, and I've been in crises where you've really had to, you don't have a lot of information to update the media with, but you still have to do the update. You don't get to just say, well, we don't want to do this update right now because there's nothing to say. You have to do the update, because if you don't do the update, it looks like you're hiding something. So every hour on the hour in a real crisis, you're giving an update, and that update keeps you out of hot water. Because otherwise, you wind up really in a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
Corey, I mean, Corey, your thoughts on this, and then I've got like a follow up around like which lens should they have taken if the crisis comms lens was the wrong one to proactively take here. But I'm curious, Corey, any reaction to what Carter's put on the table?
Yeah, no, I think that the crisis comms stuff he put on the table is exactly what I was hoping we could at least chat a little bit about here, because it is interesting. I don't think that the Royals appreciate they're in a 21st century. Yeah. Social media crisis, right? And there are rules like don't lie. The adage is always open the door or they'll come through the window. Provide them those regular updates. Certainly don't do, you know, when the rumors are speculating about is she, I mean, it's nonsense. She's alive, right? But like when the rumors are flying around like that, a doctored photo is just like pouring gasoline on this crazy fire that is the internet here. But we didn't even talk about the response from Kensington Palace the next day being like, oh, I'm an amateur photographer and I just edited the picture as so many other
people. Everyone's well. Happy Mother's Day.
Hope everyone's good, but not a picture, you know?
Either of herself or the unedited, undoctored photo, correct.
Look, this shouldn't fucking shock us that the royal family has one foot in an entirely different century. Their entire existence
is
an entirely different century.
Here we go. The anti-monarchist comes to play. Well,
I'll give you the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am not going to go down,
Corey,
this
is a general rule. Yeah. You don't get this podcast space to hit on purple. Keep going.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can learn more about that at betterthannenshi.ca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we own, and it goes to nenshi.ca, which is a site that's seeing a lot of visitors. Yeah, go ahead, Corey. We'll interrupt that.
But check those domain lists again.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. Their shit is stupid. The royal family is stupid. The coronation, when we got to see it in full color HD, those robes that look so regal in black and white photos and in paintings, they look stupid. And a lot of what they're doing right now looks pretty stupid. It's antiquated. It doesn't actually kind of align or kind of consistently, support a modern communication strategy. But I think it might, again, be Occam's razor. I think it's as simple as they don't think that these rules apply to them.
Yeah.
This is exactly where I wanted to go, which is how do institutions, Carter, that have flown above the law continue to do so, right? Like, I like your advice of like, hey, the rules apply to you. But what if the client today asks you, Carter, I've never had to follow the rules, and your job is to tell me the rules don't apply to me. Modernize whatever you need to do, but make sure the rules don't apply to me. What if that's the scope of a client, and you're a high-paid strategist for Kensington Palace to be like, I agree, world's changed, but I'm not going to get into the fucking dirt. Like, that's not what we do. Our bar is that we always fly above. If that's the scope given to you, are you turning down that contract, Carter, and saying, fuck that? The world applies to everyone. And Corey, same question coming to you in a second.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an almost impossible contract to do. I mean, there are times, there are people who are successful in dealing with similar types of issues. I mean, Donald Trump is kind of the exception to every rule, right? We know that Donald Trump is, you know, the where's Melania trope predates this where's Kate problem, right? Like, where is Melania? Did they replace her? Is she a body double? All the same questions, right? We've seen all the exact same questions about Kate as we see with Donald Trump, and he weathered it. Yeah, but he weathers it at a cost, right? If you're prepared to pay Donald Trump costs, which is, you know, lighting your hair on fire every time you open your fucking mouth, then you can get away with anything, because now people come to see the circus. And if the royal family wants to be a circus, I'll take that contract and we'll light your hair on fire every 3 days, which you're pretty much doing anyways. You know, like the royal family's pretty much taken the light your hair on fire and everybody will pay attention to you a little bit too seriously. So my advice to them, though, would be, listen, if you want to have a normal existence, then you got to stop being the royal family. You don't have to be the royal family. But if you want to be the royal family, then this is the price, because your royal family isn't the royal family of Sweden, right? It's not the royal family of Denmark. It is the royal family of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth. And with that comes a whole lot more attention than, you know, the princesses and princes of Monaco. this is just a totally different world. So if you want that attention and everything that comes with it, then you got to play by that attention's rules. Period. End of sentence.
Corey Carter's denying the contract. Are you accepting it? The scope is the rules, they shouldn't apply. It's your job to make sure they don't. Are you accepting that contract to help them develop that strategy?
I'm sure it pays well, and I probably get a really nice monogram to represent myself and my, you know, I'll get a royal charter or something.
Actually, sure, they give you a country. I think they give you a country.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it a good one?
They're all good ones, okay?
Yeah, they're all good.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a bad one. When you say that, makes it sound like a bad one.
Okay, well, yeah. Hypothetically, Corey, are you accepting this contract? Don't fucking skirt the question.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I actually think this would be such a fascinating contract to take because you were trying to play an entirely different game. Would you be successful at it? I don't think so, but I would take it for the money and because it would be interesting here.
And what would you try to do? What would your framework be? How'd you think about it? Tell me about this.
I mean, I would lean hard into this idea that the rules don't apply to us, right? If you were trying to make a point that you are a royal and you are not beholden to take yourself out into public and show yourself all of the time, you're actually doing it too subtly, in my opinion, right? You actually need to go harder into that space and say, listen, when we feel like it, we'll show up, you know? But like the reality is you got to do that with a smile and charm, but this is kind of...
That's really interesting, Corey. I think you could go headlong into that.
Yeah,
this, like what would you do?
We are greater than you.
You might get the subcontract, huh?
Yeah, I think I could get subbed in on this.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Let's put this in time and space. Work together on this for me. If Kensington Palace came to you tomorrow and said, "We need your help, but these are their conditions. We're not going to bow to the mob. We're not like anything we do sets a precedent. Our precedent, not just in the social media era, but for years, decades, centuries, has been X, which is we are above it all. Help me construct it from today onward."
You want to talk precedent? There was a tweet that was talking about the Princess of Wales is missing. The spare prince is in exile, and the king is treating cancer with herbs. This is normally when you'd expect France to invade. Right? I mean, like, this is there's precedent for them kind of all falling to pieces and all of that. But no, I think...
So Corey would start shitting on them first thing in the meeting. Okay, that's good. Okay.
I actually learned that from Stephen.
Yeah, it's a great technique.
Before negging was a word, Stephen Carter nagged several prospective clients.
Did I ever say on this podcast the story about where we started a presentation, Stephen and I, of a client, and one of them mentioned they were a Republican? This is a prospective client we have just
met. Now's a good time as any. Go ahead, Corey. Yeah.
And Stephen says to this client, deadpan, not a smile on his face, "Well, I thought you were smarter than that." And then proceeded to give the pitch. We didn't get that work.
Was shocking. I thought we had that in the bag.
Do you think that lost it, Carter? Or do you feel something else?
No, I mean, I think we dug our way out of that. But it was probably Corey's weak performance in the presentation.
Yeah, it might have been. I could never pick my jaw off the floor the entire hour that followed.
That was a good one. That's a good memory.
Corey, back to you. Today,
onwards,
help them. What are you doing? They need to be above the rules. They've got no desire to get into the mud, no desire to play by the rules that we all suggest everyone should play by. How are you helping them?
Put out the picture again and tell everybody to eat shit.
Yeah, I think that actually the way to
kinda
do it...
Kind of, though, right?
Yeah, kind
of. I think the way to do it is to publish a list of media that you're not going to be doing interviews when the princess does return, and stick to your guns. Don't do interviews with them. Fuck them. If you don't, here's the way it's going to work. We're returning to the 1950s. We control the media. If you do not do what we want you to do, then we're just not going to give you access. And access is everything. The story is everything now. So maybe you can just start to really rip apart that relationship that exists. And you know, if your staff are leaking, the staff are fired. If the, you know, like really just jump on to hard ass disciplinary style of communications.
Corey, what do you think? Finish us off on this, and I've got a bunch of follow-up questions here.
Yeah, I do think that you ultimately need to draw some firm lines. The Royals have tried that and done versions of that a lot in the past couple of decades to varying degrees of success. You know, they fight the beast and they feed the beast. And this is sort of the nature of royalty in general, right? There's a kind of a resentment of the very thing that places them in their minds above the rest of us mere mortals. But in this particular case, if you are going to be out there and trying to assert your kind of differentness and independence, you got to do this kind of like no sweat, no drama. You know, maybe you just have it so the first time that Kate is seen, it is in like a totally, I don't know, because I would say like an innocuous situation, but that's exactly what they want, and that will just sort of create the frenzy. I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer to this one, Zane. It is. It's part of why I think it's an interesting file.
You're going the wrong direction. It's got to be hyper staged. It's got to be the best media event that's ever been produced by the Royals. And it's
Charles's funeral.
Yeah, I mean, kill him and just do this. But then you have this heavily scripted, heavily choreographed event where the media gets tremendous access, interviews, one-on-ones, tons of information, but it's only the media that didn't fuck you. And then you move forward. And you, in the list of people who fucked you, you just keep them out of the world. Like, if you're going to do this, the only thing that I can think of is just to say, okay, fuck it, we're going all in.
You know, there's one thing that I find fascinating about this, which is one of the very tactical recommendations that's being floated around. Corey, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, specific matter, and then this question broadened out, which is, why are they even playing on social? Like, shouldn't they just delete social? Like, should they just... And I'm really fascinated in this conversation. Once again, virality, static term, decade ago, hasn't changed. We haven't examined. Being on social, as an institution like theirs, time to re-examine that? And then let's talk about other institutions and what your current rule of thumb around social looks like and being on or off it. Let's talk about Kensington Palace and the Royal specifically, and then let's give some advice to other institutions, organizations, et cetera, on the back end of this, because I think that's a conversation that's working its way up through many organizations being like, what the fuck are we still doing here?
Thoughts, yeah, is it more risk than reward? That's interesting. I think it's actually more challenging for the Royals because they want to show, again, there's this delicate dance. They're aloof, but they're in touch with the people and they're using these channels, but they're not beholden to them. Delete your account as a strategy, though, is fascinating. I mean, especially on a dumpster fire like X or Twitter,
yeah,
right? I think that's not crazy talk, in my opinion. And I don't know. What do you replace it with would be my question. Do you literally go back to old school?
Yeah. What if it's nothing? Why are we beholden to the TikTok? And I don't mean the app. I mean like the timetable that people are setting arbitrarily for us, right? If the strategy is broadly the construction each of you have presented, which is that we are above the rules, which means one of the rules is you got to be on social. Well, we're off social now. Like, what do you think about this, Carter? I'm curious if you think of as a tactic or a strategy for them. And then I'm curious about this conversation of being on social broadened out before we come back to the Royals. So that's where I'm going next. Carter, your thoughts here.
I don't think they should be on social. I think that especially given the way that it's falling apart, you know, I'm still on Facebook because family and friends are on Facebook, but I check it occasionally, once in a while. But it's really not a social media the way it was.
Your Minions meme somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get that. I'm not on, I do Instagram, but I don't post to Instagram. And I'm on TikTok, but I don't post to TikTok. Let's return these things to what they could be. And that is, they're entertainment mediums. They're not production mediums. And go back to staid, controllable production, and don't worry about the number of hits that you get on TikTok or the number of eyeballs that you would have gotten on TikTok. I mean, fuck, they're going to pull it from there anyways and clip it up and put it up onto that for you. So you don't even need to, you don't need to participate. And I think I would like to take my own advice and return to being off of X, because it's a fucking cesspool. Anybody who's on X is a lunatic, and I'm counting Corey and I amongst those lunatics.
Yeah, you guys have had an interesting, just on a personal journey, like yo-yoing, not to like say anything that, but it's interesting just to see you guys off it, on it, yeah. Engaged, not engaged. Corey, which brings me to this. I'm going to keep that bracket open of the Royals, but I want to examine a broader comm strategy of delating socials. Organizations are considering this. If they're net new, do we need any? And if they're already engaged, if they've one of those organizations that's got 12 of them underneath, find us on every medium. Do we cull and do we just not worry about this anymore? Like, what? How are you processing this as like a comms expert today?
Yeah, I do think one of the challenges any organization has is kind of the just expansion of these things and the fact that some of these channels pay off and some of these channels do not. And the channels that you invest in, it really is kind of like an investment. You've built an audience that has cost money, that has cost time, and it becomes difficult for people to want to walk away from that kind of investment. But I've said all of this, and I think that a lot of the time companies go almost by vibe where they're feeling like, oh, we got to be there. And it, you know, there's strong network effects to these things. And one of the unspoken network effects is if all of your competitors are on social, you kind of feel the need to be on social too, because you don't want to be, it's not so much you want to be in the conversation, it's that you fear being out of the conversation. I wonder in a way if that's not the Royals too. Harry and Meghan are on social, so they feel they need to be on social.
Harry and Meghan are on Maury Povich too. I mean,
they don't want the contrast though. They don't want to look like they're the ones who are out of touch or old fashioned. And this is about companies as much as the Royals. They don't want to feel like they're the option that can't get with the times. But it does sort of feel like the worm is turning on this one, and people are starting to say, you're not cool because you're on Twitter. Twitter came around in, what, 2007, 2008? Yeah. And it's just not a cool place, right? Well, like, guess, you don't need to question, be on Twitter to be.
I wonder if the modern day badge of honor, Carter, from a comms perspective, is depth. It's not reactionary, and it's not being on some of these platforms. And if you're an organization, is the conversation on social toxicity, social media toxicity, at a high enough water level that you could now say, in fact, we're actually not purposely not going to be on them, and here's one thing we're going to do, or here's a different way we're going to do it, and kind of make that your badge of honor, right? The initial badge of honor was to say, we're everywhere. Where you are, we are. Early politics, early companies, it was about meeting you where you're at. And now it's to say, where that place has become too toxic. We're about depth. We're about clarity of thought. We're actually going to remove ourselves from these platforms. We've seen it. But I'm wondering if you have a bit of a framework for how organizations and even politicians, Carter, should think through this in a certain way. If a politician today wants to express depth, could they just make the argument that, yeah, I might miss out and be part of miss out on the picture, but the identity marker of me not being on there actually means more than me being on there? I'm putting a hypothetical on the table for both of you to consider.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the interesting things that I've been thinking about as Corey's been chatting is, would I pay to post, right? If it took 5% of my budget, in my communications budget, to post this type of information to Twitter or to Facebook or to whichever the social medias we're looking at, would I pay for it? And I think that for a lot of communications companies or for companies in general, they wouldn't invest the dollars. And that's one of the reasons that they do it. They're able to for free get some sort of a hit or a bump that pushes up their social capital, for lack of a better phrase. And I think that, you know, if you were to a company looking at this, you should be saying, if we wouldn't pay for it, we shouldn't be there. Politicians are a little different because I think that politicians have a mandate to communicate with their audience a little bit differently. Like, I'm not sure that, you know, Tide is on TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they are.
You're actually not on Tide Talk?
I'm not on Tide Talk.
You got to get on Tide Talk.
I got to get on Tide Talk. You know, but I think that if you gave the space back to Mr. Beast, then you're probably going to be okay.
Can I say, though, one of the things that Steven said earlier that I thought about jumping on, just kind of following the thread, but ultimately decided not to, but now I kind of want to, is, you said, oh, the Royals can get off it. Somebody else will post it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Trump has had that sort of effect. Don't mean to interrupt you.
Because he's posting on Truth Social, and then somebody is taking it to the next place, right? Here's the reality of Twitter. It's just become a wire service with an audience of assholes in real time critiquing everything. This is how a lot of people get their news out. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've talked to people who are like, oh, we'll put it out on Twitter. It's not, you know, we're not emailing the media, but it gets it out there and it's a statement that allows it to be on the record here. And so that is one of the virtues of the channel. It's just it's a lower stakes wire service. It's not actually lower stakes, but it kind of feels like it is, and it feels a little more ephemeral. And so that's how many people use it. So to circle back to your like, oh, somebody else will post it. I don't know if that's true, because where are they going to get that content? Are you going to invite like these bloggers to take pictures on their phones at Kensington Palace, at Buckingham Palace? Is it just going to be the media? Because that's a dying group of people. Like,
yeah, I mean, well, maybe the Royals decide to prop up the other dying institution.
But let's be clear where this is all going. It's going to owned media. It's going to people building their own content. Yeah. And if you build your own content, you need a way to distribute your own content.
Wasn't there a company?
And that's the challenge.
Was it you, Corey, who was telling me about a company that had basically built their own socials into their website? Or am I just giving you credit for something that
you should thank you for the credit though?
Yeah.
Did I build it? It kind of feels like something.
No,
I would
but
build.
I think that people are starting to look at, okay, forget about being on these other socials, be on our webpage, and our webpage will have social interactions for you, but it's going to be curated and controlled because people don't want that. Experience of complete lunacy that we're getting right now. From everything.
Well, and I'm not on it very often, but let's talk about, like, let's make this about us, which we like to do, Carter. I don't know if you know that.
Because everything is about us, as you know.
I mean, we've created an entire community on Discord.
Yeah.
Right? An active...
I mean, you're using the word "we" pretty generously.
Yeah, it's pretty liberal.
Sorry. I've set the spark.
You are the Svengali.
I hear I'm a part of the conversation quite often, which is nice to hear.
Yeah, but not in a good
Corey,
way.
There's,
but you are on the conversation.
I understand, which is why I'm not on it usually. But Corey, there's something to be said there around the state of this going smaller, controlled, closed, even when that was an option available, where we were larger, open, viral in some ways. And not to say it's a direct response to that. I'm not saying we're going analog, but there is a movement here. And I think we'd be remiss to say it's not going to have an impact on how politicians and candidates potentially cull and culminate communities.
Well, so it's an interesting point. Well, first of all, I would say nobody has ever called the strategist Discord controlled or ordered in any way, shape.
Well, I mean, I'm rarely on it, so I'm just making a few assumptions here. Yeah.
But it is an interesting point. Certainly, I think you can have a much better conversation there than you can have on Twitter. This almost sounds like a plug. I don't actually mean it as one. Like, you can actually have conversations. But
why is that actually? Because you do it. You're on there all the time. You and Carter. Like, let's examine. Why do you think that is?
Well, in part because there's actually like an exchange and a back and forth, in part because it's the same people. So a certain civility develops as you get to sort of know people's beats, and you don't have to. You don't have that classic Twitter thing where somebody immediately assumes that you are operating from the worst faith place possible.
Yeah, there's
so that's an important part of it. Another part of it is it's a little more long form, and it's a little bit more, I wouldn't even call it gated, but
it's a community.
You know, it's a community. It's a community. I don't know. I mean, to your broader point, Zane, this is actually the kind of the macro trend in social, right? WhatsApp groups, Discords, even Facebook groups that are closed off. You are seeing the walls come up as people decide they don't want to deal with the world outside of them, and they would rather have these conversations with people that they kind of want to be around. And often that is tied around this notion of community in some way. You know, most of them are not around podcasts, but there are ones around your family. There are ones like I think about the WhatsApp groups that I have, right? Alumni groups that you're members of, communities, you know, physically in the same geography as you, WhatsApp groups, and people are seeing more value in that. And so But they're often fed by these bigger wire service style social media things, right? It starts somewhere and somebody copies and pastes it. And inevitably someone says, I don't have Twitter. Can you just tell me what that link says? And so on.
And then
so
they
forth.
Riff on it. Then they converse.
I just
on
don't
it.
Know. Yeah. I think like, I don't know if these smaller ecosystems work as well without the bigger ones out there too.
It's so interesting, Carter. The parallel there would be, and this is not a perfect parallel, but take a walk with me, which is news needs to be reported, fact-checked, delivered credibly and informatively in order for us to even have a podcast to riff on, right? We need a fact base. We need a newsroom. We need the CBC and other outlets to produce what they do so that we can confidently bullshit about what we do, right? Like, we don't exist without the news. This podcast, and by extension, our small Discord community doesn't exist without, you know, this. So it's like this really interesting, like, what's
it's like
the bedrock?
700 people, Zane. You don't need to
it's a mess. Why are you undercutting it? Okay. People can join this amazing club of 700, right? They can do that at strategistpatreon.com, which will actually take you to betterthannenshi.ca, which actually takes you to a poster of me, which you can purchase. Carter, it's a link trail. Carter, any thoughts on this? And then I want to summarize this conversation. I think it's been fascinating.
No, I'm good. Thanks very much.
Corey, what's the ultimate comms lesson you're taking away here? Living in this. As a communicator who's worked with big organizations, I hate to call them institutions, but they are. You've worked for institutions that have rules, that have boundaries, that have, frankly, like, we don't do that style, sort of arrangements that they have internally made and almost biblically carved in stone. As a corporate communicator, as an institutional communicator, put that hat on. What are the lessons you've learned here?
You know, there's this interesting thing about social media in particular, where there's this whole body of what is social media best practice, right? And I use best practice almost in air quotes. Right? It's this idea of what's going to get the most engagement, what's going to build you the biggest audience base. And those actually should not be your goals as a corporation. They may be in service of goals, but those are almost certainly not your goals. And the challenge you have as an institution is that best practice is rarely available to you because it usually requires a singular voice. It requires a personality. That personality often is edgy or provocative, and it has a very strong feel and sense of self to it. And there's back and forth. And institutions have a problem with that. Institutions might need to be celebrating a funding agreement in the morning and talking about a death in the evening. They need to have so many different tones they can cover. Institutions have all sorts of approval levels. The institutional account's not going to engage in a back and forth with somebody, and they're not, as a result, going to be able to drive that kind of engagement and move it forward. And institutions don't tend to shitpost, right? You know, Wendy's can talk about round hamburgers. The government of Alberta can't take that kind of edge to things as they move along there. So that's a challenge.
I'm kind of an institution, and I kind of shitpost. So
institutions lumber. And one of the challenges institutions have, and this is broadening to your point about the Royals here, is that because of the things that make them institutions, actual things, real things, they're not just being bad at these things. They have to act in certain ways for certain very legitimate reasons. The government of Alberta Twitter account just can't start randomly spouting stuff off. It could be market moving. It could have major consequences in people's lives, right? But because of those things, they are often judged as like not up to the moment, or like, man, what a lame account or something like that, right? And this is fundamentally, I think, an exacerbation of a bigger communications problem that exists all the time, but is worth actually thinking about for a minute here, which is that you often have the biggest tensions in communications when the audience expectations and your actions are the most misaligned. And if you're an institution and you're on a social media platform that is a fucking shit-flinging free-for-all, you are going to have those challenges more often, right? And if you're an institution like the Royal Family, they don't get much more institutional than that. So that's a bit of a challenge. They have exacerbated that, however, by carrying this sort of feeling through more broadly, this idea that they don't need to play by the rules. So the rules is just another way of saying expectations, because there are not actual rules in this case. Yeah. And their actions are not meeting those expectations. Some people, they will intentionally do that. They're going to pay a price. Maybe they think they get more than they lose, but they're going to pay a price for that. We are seeing that price right now. This is the consequence of that kind of approach to communications, where you say, fuck the audience. It's a bit interesting to see, and you rarely get a case study this pronounced.
Carter, I asked Corey about the institutional rules and what lessons this teaches or reinforces for him. I'm going to ask you about the political strategy rules. Take this, port it into political strategy. What does it redefine? What does it reinforce? What does it contribute to how you think about things?
Well, I think that it reinforces that, you know, the medium is, you're not a producer in the medium, right? Like there's a cost and a consequence that we don't factor into being on the medium. You know, by producing information, by putting up content, you are essentially selling something to that medium. You're giving it to them for no revenue. And what you're asking for in return is this eyeballs thing that is not a, you know, it's not actually a value necessarily towards achieving your ultimate goal. So if you're, you know, running for office, if you're selling cornflakes, whatever you might be doing, I think that what Corey said about trying to really set out what your ultimate goal is super important. When Mr. Beast uses his YouTube account, it is the outcome to have the number of people watching it. That is the outcome. But, you know, candidates aren't Mr. Beast. Candidates, like the
not until Mr. Beast runs for office.
Well, we've talked all the time about Jeff Jackson, North Carolina, running, you know, and the way he uses TikTok.
Once again, just like me on
and
Discord.
You use all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's been once
the
and it's
royal
been you,
we. So. The royal purple we.
Oh, use, Corey, yeah. We've got the royal we. That's good.
Nice. Yeah, we use, you know, we talk about Jeff Jackson because he uses his, there's absolutely no sensationalism to it. Absolutely no sensationalism. And yet it still works in the medium. Everybody else, I think, is trying to find a way to do the sensational or trying to match and find views. And I just think it's a mistake.
We're going to leave that segment there. Move it on to our over under and our lightning round. Stephen Carter. Stephen Carter, yes or no, is Kate Middleton dead?
Yes. What was the question? I'm sorry. What was the question? I wasn't paying attention to the question.
Corey, like I said, I've got
is
a PDF.
It no? We
got
is the best. No.
We've got the best libel PDF that I could find. Okay. Is she alive or dead, Corey?
I'm sure a Kate Middleton somewhere is dead.
Carter, last question to you. I'll start with you. We start with you, of course. Ultimately, will purple be victorious?
Purple is a losing color. It's been a losing color for decades.
Oh, fantastic. That's thank you, Carter. Corey, purple, yeah. Victorious, it's going to happen.
I mean, I think you can learn more about the candidates that should win at notamurderer.ca. I can't say anything about why the domain is called that, but unrelated, yeah, purple will not be victorious. Yeah.
Buy your Zane Velgi for Leader posters. They're always on sale all the time, 365 days a year. And that's a wrap on episode 1291 of The Strategist. My name is Zane Velgi. With me, as always, Corey Hogan, Stephen Carter, and we'll see you next time.